Hey, we're back again for one of our infamous movie retrospectives.
They're infamous? I didn't realize they were infamous.
Well, I'm just making that up.
Okay. To make it sound good, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
This is a Cronenberg movie, you know. Jenny's a huge fan of Cronenberg, and I like Cronenberg. We grew up with him, and he made weird-ass fucking movies.
Yeah.
Canadian movies.
And we loved all those fucking weird-ass movies back then. I still love weird-ass movies.
And it was kind of like a parallel universe Hollywood scene, because a lot of this shit was going on in Canada. But we weren't really, we were kids, we didn't realize it was Canada.
Yeah, I don't think it ever, like, really occurred to me at the time.
Yeah, no, it didn't mean
in the 70s or 80s. Like, because a lot of his movies, I mean, this movie, which is Rabid, is actually a notable exception, but most of his other movies, even though they were set in Canada, and his early films were famously filmed with Canadian taxpayer dollars, like, you know, for their film tax shelter deal.
Yeah.
They could have kind of been set anywhere, but this one is specifically mostly set in Montreal, and they did film it there, and it's mentioned several times that that's where it's taking place.
A Cronenberg flick was kind of like the movie version of Skinny Puppy. You know what I'm talking about? It was another, which is another Canadian product.
Yeah.
They just kind of had like a Skinny Puppy element to them. They were different.
Yeah.
You know, if you know the band Skinny Puppy.
The thing I always liked about David Cronenberg, innovative, particularly his early movies, is that I liked his juxtaposition of exploitation with, like, kind of this high-minded intellectual type of... Because he wasn't like a Roger Corman figure who was just, like, pumping out movies, you know, kind of schlocky movies and stuff. I mean, some of Cronenberg's movies, the subject matter could be said to be schlocky, but Cronenberg always kind of approached it with this really weird, like, detached, clinical kind of way of looking at it that almost made it, I don't know, there's like a really weird vibe about his movies
come back
that
in
I really
time.
Like.
I'm going to come back in time together. If Cronenberg made albums, they would be Skinny Puppy albums.
They probably
if
would
If Skinny
be, yeah.
Puppy made movies, they'd
they
be Cronenberg
movies.
That's basically what you had going on.
Yeah, there was a very similar mindset going
Same
on.
Same mindset. Like. A lot of times it's kind of like similar topics.
Yeah.
And they kind of had that really weird quality where they were, you could tell they were kind of handmade in a way, or almost homemade out of a small scene, but the quality was really good for what they were.
Yeah, and I had been wanting to do more Cronenberg, and Shudder added some of his movies, among them Rabid, which we're going to do today. They also just added The Fly, so I definitely want to do that at some point, because I think that's probably one of his best movies.
Yeah, that's probably one of his highest budget movies,
Yeah, and I think it was his most successful.
It's
as well.
Classic.
They also have Dead Ringers, and I'd like to get around to doing that eventually, because that's actually my favorite Cronenberg movie, is Dead Ringers.
Yeah, The Fly was Cronenberg's version of Poltergeist 1 in a way. You know, it was at that level.
Yeah, it was easily his most mainstream movie, even though it was completely and utterly disgusting.
Yeah.
Which I liked about it, though. I liked that was very subversive, that he made this gross-ass movie that made all this fucking
body horror.
Yeah.
Cronenberg's all about the body horror.
Oh, yeah. And he's totally fascinated by, like, disease and bodily transformation and stuff like that. We went into that a little bit when we talked about Videodrome. We went into that a little bit when we talked about Shivers. Now, Rabid actually came out in 1977, and it was the movie that came out after Shivers. Now, the interesting thing about it, and they're very kind of similar, he doesn't come out and say, oh, like, Rabid is like a sequel to Shivers, because it's not, but he's like, it's like a companion piece, because they have a very similar theme, they have some of the same actors and stuff like that. But what ended up happening was when Shivers came out, like I said, he used that Canadian tax shelter thing. I think it cost like less than $200,000 to make Shivers. And it was like a lot more successful than anyone was expecting. So the production company were like, hey, got another one of those movies laying around that's kind of like that one? And he's like, you know, I have been working on this screenplay, which at the time was called Mosquito, which if you've seen Rabid, you'll probably know why it's called that. And it was kind of similar to Shivers, like a similar kind of theme, but he kind of rushed it into production. Now, some of the money for this was also like from the tax shelter thing. I think 200,000 of it was. This was actually 565,000 this ended up costing. And interestingly enough, now probably one of the most famous or infamous things about this movie is that it stars Marilyn Chambers in her first non-porn role.
Yeah. And she actually does a pretty good job.
And I'll get into that a little bit later.
It's strange that she didn't go on to make more movies.
Yeah, she really didn't.
You think that Hollywood would have called her to do the Scream Queen type movies?
Yeah, because she would have been great. I mean, she would have been a good like Linnea Quigley type character or something like that. I mean, Linnea Quigley was more of like she was funnier and like more of a she had more of a comedic kind of thing going on. But Marilyn Chambers had. She kind of had that wholesome girl next door type of thing.
Kinda.
But she also had, and I think it served Rabid really well, she also had kind of a, like, detached innocence to her, I want to say. Which I think worked really well, like, in the context of this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if she had that detached thing because she was in porn or whatever. But the interesting thing about it, though, was that when Cronenberg was first thinking about doing this movie, do you know who he wanted for that role?
Who's that?
Sissy Spacek.
Okay, yeah.
He had just seen her in Badlands, the Terrence Malick film, and he really liked her, and he wanted to get her in the movie, but the production company said no because they're like, well, she has those freckles and she has that accent, you know, like the way she
talks.
That's
what made her, yeah, like...
Right.
Yeah, that's funny.
But they said since it's like supposed to be a Canadian movie, supposed to be set in Montreal, they didn't think it was going to fly, ridiculous. I guess.
That's kind of like when they told Arnold that, oh, with that accent... You'll never make it in Hollywood. You can't act, Arnold. You'll never make it. Yeah, okay. Okay.
It depends. It's like, well, you know.
That was fucking Arnold.
Yeah.
Without that accent, Arnold never would have made it.
Yeah, because he would have just been like another
chunkhead. You'd be like, who's that dude, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Arnold was fucking
Arnold.
It made
him distinctive. That's kind of what you have to do.
Yeah.
Like, you have to find your thing. Like, even if it's something that people are like, oh, you and your stupid big ears or whatever the fuck it is, but you have to take that and make that a feature, not a bug.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I feel like Sissy Spacek probably did that.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about that was because she didn't get this movie, I think that was what, like, Brian De Palma was like, hey, you want to be in Carrie? And she was like, sure. And then they ended up being Carrie. Now, the interesting thing was that in a scene of this movie where Marilyn Chambers is, like, walking down the street, there's a poster of Carrie, like, in the background, like, in a movie theater. So I thought that was kind of a cute little homage. But, yeah, they didn't want Sissy Spacek because of the way she talked, which I thought was really funny.
Ridiculous. So, Spacek was fucking cute as shit.
I know. Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, Ivan Reitman, who actually produced this movie, and he was, like, the music supervisor on this, too, I think. And this was, like, one of his first... Because obviously later he went on to like huge success. He did Ghostbusters and all that kind of stuff. He actually said, hey, I heard that porn actress, Marilyn Chambers, you know, which is unfair, I guess, to just call her porn actress because Behind the Green Door, which was like her most famous movie, was like a huge mainstream success. Because you remember in the 70s, you know, before home video, you had to go to like a sticky porn theater to see porno movies.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to go to that shit.
You wouldn't want to, but in the 70s, it was becoming like hip and cool for everybody to go to porno theaters and see porn movies. So Behind the Green Door, it actually made like shit ton of money.
I can't imagine that, because I'd also heard that shit would break out. It would almost be like a damn orgy in the porn theater. You know what I mean? That shit, man.
I would have hated
imagine to if you had to clean up in there.
I was just going to say I would hate to be the person that had to clean it up. Because to clean up the porn theater or those little like booths that used to be in the back of the like video stores and shit like that.
Ridiculous scene shit, man.
No, thank you. What, they used to call that a chum scrubber? I think that's what that used to be called. Why do I know that? I don't know. But yeah.
Only you would know that shit.
Well, somebody else must have known it because I must have heard it from someplace. Yeah. I don't even know if that's accurate.
About this like Canadian tax shelter thing, though, mm-hmm. it's my understanding that during that period was when, you know, that period just made Cronenberg.
Yeah.
That without that period, there never would have been a Cronenberg.
Well, yeah.
But the thing is that really Cronenberg was the only notable thing to come out of that period. Evidently, most of those movies were total shit. And that government program didn't work.
There were some good ones that came out that I think, but it's sad because a lot of them tend to be kind of like lost gems or whatever.
Well, I heard that period didn't last too long. The Canadian government decided that because there were a lot of people just cheating.
Well, and it might have been the case too because they pissed and moaned about Cronenberg's movies. Like, hey, you're using these tax dollars to make these disgusting body horror movies. And they seemed kind of mad about it until Cronenberg was like, yeah, but they're making money. And then they're like, okay.
I guess they thought they were going to make some wholesome movies.
I guess.
Yeah, to, you know.
Well, don't give money to Cronenberg if you want like a normal wholesome movie.
Yeah. Just ridiculous. Saying.
But yeah, so this movie, like I said, it has a very similar plot to Shivers in the sense that Marilyn Chambers plays this girl named Rose, and her boyfriend, whose name is Hart. Rose and Hart. Isn't that funny? I never realized that until I just rewatched the movie. They're at the beginning, they're just like, you know, in love or whatever, and they get on a motorcycle. And I think this is, this part's set in Quebec. I think it's like a rural type of thing. So they're on a motorcycle, like going down the road. And meanwhile, there's also this little clinic, one of David Cronenberg's famous, like, creepy, weird medical clinics with like the weird, like, brown building and like the sign with like the bad logo on it and everything.
Yeah, it's, you could tell that he's like really ramping up for, you know, The Brood and Videodrome, and it's going in that
direction.
He's
distrustful of medical institutions in general.
I don't blame him.
In God's domain.
I don't blame him. You know, I don't blame him. You know, look at the damn industry that did the painkillers.
Yeah.
What's this one that everybody's fucking addicted to now? That opioid crisis came out of that. They knew that people would get addicted to that.
Yeah.
That family. It was the family that did it.
The thing about this one, though, it's like, I feel like in Shivers was like a more lurid story, I guess, because it was like a sex virus and it was like a little penis worm and it turned it. What?
It looked, I guess,
like
it was.
Yeah, it was like a dick worm. Yeah. And it kind of turned everybody
into.
It's
like a stinger.
And it turned everybody into nymphomaniacs.
Yeah.
Whereas this one is almost, it's almost his take on a vampire story, but also a disease story. Now, I think he might have been inspired, as many people were, by the 1973 George Romero film, The Crazies, which is one of his lesser seen ones, but it's actually really good.
I haven't seen that one.
It was actually a big inspiration for Danny Boyle, who made 28 Days Later. To do like the whole rage virus and like zombies, but they weren't dead people and they were really fast and you got infected really quick. So I feel like that idea, you know, has been inspired. And I feel like Cronenberg might have been inspired by that as well. So in this one, Marilyn Chambers' character, Rose, her and her boyfriend are in a motorcycle accident. And it's kind of near this weird clinic that I get, it's a plastic surgery spa, essentially, is what it is. You go there and you get plastic surgery and then it's like a resort and you hang out till you're all healed up or whatever. So they get into a wreck. The boyfriend is mostly okay. I think he just breaks his hand or some shit like that. But she is all busted up and she's burned and stuff like that. So, so they send an ambulance. There's no other hospital close by. So they take her to this plastic surgery clinic. Now, the doctor that's there decides, hey, here's a guinea pig. Although, you know, I mean, she's going to die if they don't do something. But he's kind of like, oh, I have this experimental procedure, and I'm going to try it out on her. Because she can't tell me that I can't, pretty much. Right. Now, what he's talking about essentially is skin grafting. But he does something with the skin grafts, like before, like he has to send them out to a lab so they can be quote-unquote neutralized. It's almost kind of like a stem cell thing where it's like, we're going to take this part like off your ass or whatever, and we're going to stick it somewhere else, and the skin will, you know, adapt to that part of your body that we stick it on, which sounds pretty reasonable, and I think they kind of do a similar thing nowadays. But at the time, it sounded a little bit Frankenstein-y, I guess, because this was 1977. So they give her this treatment. She's in a coma for like a month or something like that, and then she wakes up later, like her boyfriend has subsequently gone home and he's been coming back to visit and stuff. And for whatever reason, I don't know if they grafted skin into her armpit and that's where the problem occurred, because it seemed like they grafted skin sort of everywhere. They had taken skin off her thigh and put it someplace else. But she wakes up and she has, it's like a mouth or a vagina or a butthole or something. It's like, it looks like something like that in her armpit. And you don't see it until later, but it has like a little stinger penis-y thing in it that comes out like a big wasp stinger and sucks blood. Like a vampire, but with your armpit.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff. When you see it, it is a mysterious process, what they're showing. It is. I mean,
well,
I'm not,
just because.
And they don't,
it's
really.
It's because you have suddenly. You have, I don't really
remember. I don't really remember them explaining how this happened.
I don't. They didn't explain
through,
it.
Through the, they just got accepted.
It just happened.
Yeah.
It's a Cronenberg movie,
right?
You know what I mean? It's just like, that's what happens when you let doctors fuck around with experimental procedures without permission.
Yeah.
Suddenly you have a butthole in your armpit
that
shoots out stingers and sucks blood from people.
Yeah. And it had teeth on it too, didn't it?
No, it was like it looked kind of like a big caterpillar with a big
like
spike at the end.
Because it seemed like she'd put her arm around people and bite and there'd be blood. And then it sometimes, I don't want to get into it.
It was like a stinger. It looked like a big wasp stinger.
Yeah.
Kind of, like a big wasp.
It was weird. It was weird, you know, and it's Cronenberg trying to trip you out.
Yeah, it was pretty trippy.
The movie is shot pretty well. It starts off with a cool motorcycle scene.
Yeah.
The quality of it, when you look at it on Shutter, it's Blu-ray quality. It's restored.
They restored it in 2007.
Yeah.
I want to say they did it right around the same time they restored Shivers. I think Arrow DVD has been doing all the Cronenberg
movies. It looks pretty good. You can tell that it's an early Cronenberg movie. It's not quite as, I would say, technically good as what you would see in like The Brood.
Definitely one of his transitional.
Because,
like I said, Shivers was basically his first full-length feature film. Yeah. So this is only really his second
main
movie.
The thing with Shivers is that I found Shivers to be a lot more of a conventional movie in terms of the way the edit and the story went.
Yeah.
It's very watchable because it's a lot like other movies of the genre.
Yeah.
This one you could tell he's really trying to do his own thing. It is weird.
Yeah.
It's weird, but I don't really think he's not as competent in this movie as he became later.
Yeah.
Like I mean, Videodrome was like the beginning of Cronenberg saying, fuck yeah, I do the shit my way. And he's taking you with it.
Yeah.
With the movie. So what it is it, if you ask me, this one is kind of like a glimmer of the Cronenberg to come.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's there. It's just he's not really on top of his craft yet.
Yeah.
But
like
it's still a good movie to watch
if
you're into this kind of shit.
Yeah. And you can definitely see where a lot of his like later obsessions and themes like came from. And I think we probably talked a little bit about this when we were talking about Shivers, too. I mean, Shivers, like I said, it was basically a sex parasite.
Yeah.
And it took place pretty much all in one apartment building, right?
Because
like at the end, they were like, oh, we're going to go out and spread it or whatever. Now, in this movie, you know, he got like, you know, twice the budget to make it. So it's on a much larger scale.
Yeah.
Because what happens is that once she starts like biting people with her armpit stinger, she drinks their blood and that's all she can drink. Like she can't eat normal food anymore. Cause when she tries to eat food, she just throws it up. So she just has to like take in blood through her armpit. But she starts spreading what is essentially a rabies type virus. So people will get it and then like it incubates for 6 to 8 hours, I think they mentioned. And then that person starts foaming at the mouth and starts raging and starts going after and trying to drink the blood of other people.
So what you end up with is almost kind of like a cross between a vampire story and say like a Typhoid Mary type situation.
Yeah.
It's like that.
She is essentially like, and in a way, I think even though it was sort of accidental that they cast like a former porn star in that role.
VD.
Yeah, she was like a walking venereal disease, essentially, because she was going around. Now, the tragic thing about her character, though, is that one, it wasn't her fault. I mean, she was in a motorcycle accident. She was, you know, against her will. She was given these skin grafts. You know, she was in a coma, so she couldn't like consent to it. And she ended up with this fucking thing in her armpit. And then when she wakes up, she has this bloodlust and she doesn't really, you know, understand it. So she escapes from the hospital. She goes and starts, you know, trying to drink from a cow. She drinks from a farmer, all this other stuff. But she doesn't realize that she's spreading it. Like, she doesn't realize that she's patient zero.
Right.
You know what I mean? So she runs away from the clinic. She's hitchhiking. She gives it to, like, all these people. And she ends up in Montreal, and it starts spreading. And it spreads to such an extent that, you know, they have to declare martial law because people are just getting rabid all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a great scene where she's in a mall, and it's set at Christmas time, too, just for added shittiness. And, you know, the army has to come in because there's, like, a rabies outbreak, like, in the mall or whatever. And there's Santa there, and he's, like, taking a picture of the girl, and they just start shooting everybody, and they fucking shoot Santa. They just, like, shoot.
And the mall.
It's so fucked up.
And the mall is Dan Bell as fuck. I mean, nowadays these are dead malls. It's like a 70s mall. When you're our age, it takes you back to our childhood.
I remember.
You remember when malls looked like that? Yeah, everything was like dark brown, a little dark brown. Damn.
Those brick planters.
The brick shit. You know, it's funny.
Those brown, like,
it's funny.
Benches.
Yeah, most of those are torn down now or dead now. You know,
that's one of the things that fascinates me about watching movies from the 70s. It's weird because I don't have nostalgia in the sense that I'm like, oh, I wish I could go back to that time because I don't want to. Because a lot of it was really ugly.
Yeah.
But...
And cheap.
Yeah. You know, but it fascinates me being like, oh, yeah, when I was a kid, I remember, you know, when a bench looked like that. Or I remember that couch. Or I remember that package, that packaging. Like, I remember when Jell-O had that box. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just weird to revisit because it's shit you forgot about.
In one scene, they zoom in. A person's picking something up off of a desk or something. And they zoom in on the desk and I saw a pair of damn glasses. And they were clear, like sunglasses.
Yeah.
That had glitter inside the plastic. And I just had like a damn acid flashback. I was like, I remember when glasses looked like that.
It's shit like
that. When they had that shit.
It's little things.
Yeah.
Because, I mean.
I haven't seen them in forever.
Because you remember kind of big things. Like, I remember, like, what my family's cars looked like and stuff like that. But whenever you see a movie from the time period, and like I said, you see, like, packages in their kitchen or, like, you know, a pair of shoes or something like that. It's something you wouldn't necessarily remember, but then when you see it.
Yeah.
And it, like, makes, like, a weird little thing. And
we were watching,
like, oh, man.
We were watching last night another 70s movie called The Car.
The Car,
which is about a possessed
Shutter
car.
Shudder just added that
and
one.
Yeah, and the quality of it was really good. It's like Blu-ray quality.
James Brolin's in that shit.
Yeah, we're going to do a review on that. It was an excellent movie, actually.
Yeah.
But that movie reminded me how shitty paint on cars used to look.
Yeah, those gold cop cars.
Shitty paint. Quality paint was like terrible.
Everything was so ugly.
Everything was shitty and crappy.
Everything was brown and orange and mustard.
And the paint didn't have any depth to it.
Yeah.
It was like the paint that you would paint on the walls of a school cafeteria. And you got that shit on the car. It was really nasty. Yeah.
It's just funny how like cheap and crappy everything looked. Yes. Like I said, so I'm not nostalgic in that way.
No. I wouldn't mind going back just to visit for a few days.
Yeah, but I would
not. You don't want to live back in those days. I remember.
Stay there.
I remember it.
That sucked a lot.
The only thing that was good back in the 70s was the pizza. Pizza was fucking awesome back then. The pizza back then was better than pizza now. Y'all kids don't know what pizza really tastes like. With that buffalo cheese and real crust, homemade crust. Like at Round Table Pizza, old Round Table from the 70s.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Well, you know what's interesting is that, I mean, I grew up in Daytona Beach, which is kind of rednecky. It's still kind of rednecky. It's a lot bigger now than when I was growing up. But I don't even remember what, like, when I was a kid, we had Pizza Hut, but it was sit down.
Yeah, and it was good. It was better.
I don't think we had pizza delivery until I was older, like Domino's and stuff. I don't think we had that.
And it was bad even back
then. Whenever we got pizza when I was a kid, we always went to the mom and pop place that was like a mile away and got pizza from there.
Mom and pop pizzerias were better.
Yeah, and their sausage and onion pizza, Pantheon pizza, it was like, it might still be there. I don't know. I haven't been to Daytona in a long time. It's this dinky little dive, but their sausage and onion pizza was like, or hamburger and onion rather.
I remember when Little Caesars was great.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I remember.
Their pizza was never good.
Yeah, it was. It was really good.
Back they were like Hungry Howie's level.
No, Siddle's. No, it was good. It was good in Michigan during like 86. Okay. It was good. Really good.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, it was better than
Siddle's. I'm just saying.
Yeah, there was a time when it was good.
I know.
Domino's was always kind of mediocre. It was always mediocre to bad.
It's all right if you're having a party and you need a lot of food for not that much.
We're doing a movie review. We're talking about I Got Us on Pizza. But the crowd loves this shit anyway. They love this shit.
I'm going to say, too, another thing that I liked about Rabbit. I love that David Cronenberg, I love the fucking names he comes up with for these fucking characters. Like, the fucking main doctor of this clinic is called Dan Keloid. He always has, like, names that almost sound like alien names, you know what I mean? Barry Oblivion.
Well, what was cool about this period...
Barry Convex, or whatever that guy's name was from Videodrome.
What was cool about this this period in filmmaking, and in the film scene, was that this was the time when the bromance, okay, the bromance between Cronenberg and, I forgot that these names on tip of my tongue. Dude did Escape from New York and all the other ones.
John Carpenter.
This is about when that time started to form. And John Carpenter, you know, was watching these movies and giving shout outs to Cronenberg. You know, they were buddies. But this is where a lot of that stuff started around this time.
That is one thing. Like I said, I'm not nostalgic for going back to that time period, but I will argue with anyone that cares to argue that the 70s was probably the golden age of horror. Not saying that there were, and there's great horror movies from every decade. Actually, you know, the 80s were also fantastic. 90s were a little, but there was some good stuff that came out then. But I feel like it's gotten better in like the last, you know, 10, 20 years with some really good ones. The 90s was a little bit of a dry period. But the 70s, I think, produced probably the most classic horror movies.
Yeah, because you had Romero and all these guys, they were starting to catch their stride. And it's because a small filmmaker didn't necessarily have to be well connected with Hollywood, and he could be in his local area raising local money, making a fucking cool film.
It was very much in line with the punk rock aesthetic.
Right. And they
like
were,
a DIY type of attitude.
And the good ones were rising to the top. The mediocre ones were, you know, like Legend of Boggy Creek and all those guys, they were kind of in the background, but the good ones were rising to the top, and then later on were becoming Hollywood stars. So, yeah, it was very much like the punk rock scene.
Yeah.
Very much.
I mean, that's something I really like about that whole, because you have to think, you know, now everybody can have a YouTube channel. Shit, we've got
everybody
one.
Everybody can make a movie.
It's super cheap.
Yeah.
But the 70s were, you know, late 60s, early 70s. That was kind of the first time that had ever happened, where the technology was becoming
cheap enough that somebody could do it. If you really wanted to.
And then there was this whole attitude about, you know, do your own thing. You don't need to be within a system. You can just make a movie. And it was like guerrilla filmmaking and shit like that. So that was kind of the first time that had really happened, at least to that large of an extent.
Yeah, and some of them, the ones that ended up being successful and famous, like Cronenberg, you know, they actually, and Carpenter, you know, they made good movies.
Yeah.
You know, some of them did. A lot of them just disappeared, but
yeah, I mean, a lot of people.
It was a Darwinian. It was a Darwinian process of the good ones rising up to the top. So.
Even a lot of the shitty ones that were made in the 70s are still pretty entertaining.
Yeah,
I have to say.
Yeah,
in their shittiness.
I guess you could say so. Yeah.
Yeah. So
they were watchable, and you could laugh.
I don't mind that at all.
And really, that kind of thing went on into the 80s. It's just that if you hadn't really made it by 85, you probably weren't going to make it.
Yeah, because I feel like by 85...
Yeah, by that time...
It had kind of started to decline a little bit.
Yeah, and guys like Cameron and everything, and Hollywood started to swallow up the good independent.
The good ones, yeah.
Good independent. They started to become, you know, into the system.
Yeah.
You know, they were... You know, they wanted them to become unionized and all that, too, you know, and use their friends.
Yeah.
So...
But, you know, like I said, that whole time period, you know, it produced so many auteurs, so many, like, great fucking movies.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Cronenberg among them, and he's probably, like I said, aside from David Lynch...
I forgot about him, yeah.
He's probably my very favorite director. You know, so so I've tried to see, like, all of his movies, even the ones that are kind of, like... you know, considered not as good. This one is kind of considered one of his lesser films because it was an early one. But like I said, it's not quite as weird. It's not as weird as Videodrome. It's pretty gory. You know, it's got a lot of his signature kind of stuff, his signature kind of body horror stuff.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty... It's a larger scope than Shivers, which was, like, his first movie. And it was, like I said, it was very contained in one location. This one was, like, citywide, and I think they did a good job of that.
If you've never seen a Cronenberg movie, I don't recommend this one.
I wouldn't start with this
one. No, don't start with it. I would actually start with The Brood. Because The Brood is watchable, and that'll draw you into it. And then you can go to Videodrome, and that tops The Brood.
Yeah.
Then you can go back and watch some of the other movies that he made, you know. And The Fly, really...
That's his most crowd-pleasing.
It's his most crowd-pleasing one, but there isn't as much special to it, if you ask me.
That's
it's kind of mainstream.
Well, one, because it's
remake. Conventional.
Yeah.
It is good, though.
Yeah. And a lot of people have argued that it's his best film, and I'm not going to dispute that assertion. It's not my favorite film of his, but I really do like it.
Yeah.
But since it was a loose remake... you know, it does kind of have a more traditional movie type of thing. It's not as weird.
Yeah.
It's super gory, which that's always a plus, but it's not as weird, like, tonally. It's not as weird. It's not like I said, from that time period, I like Dead Ringers a lot better. Because that is a strange
ass movie. Yeah, I forgot about that. That was a good movie.
That was a creepy fucking movie.
But if you're listening to this review and you've never seen a Cronenberg movie, don't see this one first.
Yeah, this is like a deep cut. You need to, like,
go to The Brood first. That was his first really competent movie.
I would see The Brood or Videodrome first.
Yeah, I would go Brood and then Videodrome. Because, you know what I mean? That way, there's like it rises.
Yeah.
You know?
And Scanners.
That's true. Scanners.
And Scanners.
Scanners. Scanners won. None of the other Scanners.
Honestly, it's funny because did Netflix or Shudder or somebody put Scanners
2 I remembered up? Scanners 2 being or good until I saw it recently, and I was like, we watched it again. Fuck?
It's unwatchable.
Terrible. Unwatchable.
But see, I don't think Cronenberg had anything to do with
it. No, he didn't. Scanners 1 was awesome movie. Except disturbed me. That disturbed me.
Except for the main guy that was the main actor in it. He was a little...
Yeah, I would go Brood. I would go Brood, Videodrome, Scanners in that order. If you've never seen Cronenberg,
and then go back and see,
then
the
you can go back
ones.
And you can see the old ones.
Because I mean, I feel like Cronenberg is still making movies nowadays. He's kind of gotten away from the horror genre or horror sci-fi genre a little bit. You know, he did History of Violence, obviously. He did Eastern Promises, both of which are amazing, amazing movies. But they're more crime type movies, like crime dramas, not really you know, horror, not really straight horror, not or sci-fi. I think they also have Existenz, I think, on Shudder, which is one of his, I want to say, later movies, even though it was like 1999 or something.
I don't think I ever saw.
We watched it the other, like,
I forgot what that
ago.
One was.
It was
about.
Like a virtual reality game. Jennifer Jason Leigh was in it.
Yeah.
Except it was like an organic pod.
Dead Ringers, I think, was better. I would go.
Honestly, like I said, and this may be an unpopular opinion, I'm not really sure, but Dead Ringers is easily my favorite David Cronenberg.
Yeah, I would go Brood.
And Videodrome is my second favorite.
I would go Brood, Videodrome, Scanners, Dead Ringers, and then the other one, and The Fly.
Yeah.
I'd watch him in that order, and you'll be pleased.
Yeah. He has such like an idiosyncratic vision. And like I said, some of his earlier films, it's not quite as much on display because he didn't have the big budgets. It's like he wasn't, like you said, he wasn't as confident as a filmmaker. But if you like Shivers, you definitely have to see Rabid because it's like a companion piece. You know, they're very similar in tone, even though Rabid is a lot larger scope. It takes place over the whole city of Montreal.
Shivers and Rabid were both good. It's just that I think for a younger person, those movies are kind of dated, and so I wouldn't jump into those first because they actually might turn a younger person off.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Brood, they're very 70s.
They're very 70s. Brood will actually bring a new person right into it, I think.
Yeah.
The Brood. That's just a weird movie.
Did we do a review on The Brood?
I think we did. Yeah.
I think we did.
We've done so many reviews on this.
We did a lot of Cronenberg movies. Like I said, I'm a huge fan.
The Brood just kind of disturbed me when I was a kid.
That's like, it's kind of a fucked up conceit. Yeah. I mean, because these movies, you know, like I said, Rabbit and Shivers, very much concerned with like infection.
Yeah.
Whereas The Brood was more like
reproduction,
this weird,
and weird
shit. Yeah, like this weird, like, reproductive psychological kind
and
of.
What was that? What was that British guy's name? The British guy who played the doctor who did all
Oliver
the,
Reed.
Oliver Reed, yeah. Oliver Reed was a dude that always seemed to be like one drink away from whipping your fucking ass. He scared me when I was a kid.
He was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he scared me as a kid.
That was the correct interpretation.
If that motherfucker's got one more drink in him, he's going to whip my ass. Yeah,
Oliver Reed, though.
He's a good guy. But there was something when you were a kid that there was something intimidating about him to me.
He was teetering on the edge of crazy.
Yeah.
I think that's what made him a good actor, though.
Yeah. Great British actor.
Look how good he was in in that Haunted House movie that we did, the Burnt Offerings.
Yeah.
I love him in that movie.
Yeah, I'm running with CoolCon, so it's hard for me to remember people's names. But dude from The Hand, Michael Caine. Michael Caine was another British guy that was one drink away from whipping your fucking ass, too.
All those British dudes back then.
Yeah, they were like wife beaters, man. I don't know.
They probably weren't.
But it was funny because they're kind of like classy, but then they're like got an element of toxic masculinity. Or the one more drink, I'm going to fuck you up. And they made really good dramatic kind of horror movie players.
Well, you know? Like I've always been of the opinion that
they were intimidated.
To be really great at something creative, whether it's acting or writing, you have to be a little bit crazy.
Yeah, no, both of those motherfuckers are crazy.
If you're not crazy, shit's just going to... It might be all right, but it's just going to be like mediocre. Yeah, to be like genius, you have to be kind of crazy.
Both of those dudes, though, were gifts to American cinema, though. And gets you, you know, or the American
cinema.
Oh,
yeah, scene. You're not going to get any argument.
You can't get any better from Michael Caine.
I love those old guys. Boys, man. I really do.
Damn.
Yeah, I know. I love all that shit.
Damn.
And like we said, we talked about this a lot, too. Like, all back in the day, like in the 70s, they'd be on the talk shows like Merv Griffin or whatever.
Yeah, classy.
And they'd be like all fucking sipping scotch and
smoking. Yeah, our show is inspired by that generation. We'll sit there, we'll drink, we're talking about fucking, they'd be drinking while they're fucking talking on Merv Griffin.
Yeah. The elevator killer.
They were awesome. And then when the show was over,
they'd watch The Man with Two Brains if you don't know what I'm
talking
about.
And then when the show was over, they'd go back to the hotel and like bang 70s girls.
70s girls.
Yeah, 70s girls.
With full bush.
Yeah. Exactly.
Don't see that much nowadays. Well, so I've heard.
It was another time.
It was another time.
It was another time.
Everyone was super furry. And actually, now that you mention it, getting back to Rabid, there was one scene in this, the first dude that Marilyn Chambers attacks. Like, he doesn't know what happened to him because she's just like, hey, I'm cold, come here, hug me. And then she's like, rah! And then he's like, what the fuck happened? Like, he didn't know. And then, like, later he goes and he's, like, laying down the thing and he's, like, his armpit's all bloody and shit. And while he was laying there, I know I was supposed to be looking at his bloody armpit, but all I could look at was this mat of chest hair.
Yeah.
And I'm like...
Yeah, motherfuckers didn't know better back then. No shave and nothing.
That's some manscaping, man. Yeah, what the fuck is that about?
All it takes is a Bic lighter. You can go back there and clean that shit up just like that real quick. Just whoosh, the smell.
I'm like, it looks like he has a shirt on, but he doesn't have a shirt on.
Terrible. They thought that shit was macho back then.
I guess so.
It was to hide the fact that you didn't have pecs. You just had it.
Well, it's just like how people grow beards to hide double chins.
Yeah.
I'm not hating. It's, you know, it's... Hey, man, whatever you can do, that's cool.
70s was another era. They didn't have the same standards of physical fitness. You know what I mean?
And they weren't bothered by body hair.
No.
It doesn't seem like.
Because like we were watching The Car last night, and all those cops and everything had little bitty arms.
Yeah.
You know, they had little bitty arms. And what was the guy's name, the star's name again? James Brolin.
The guy from Amityville.
James Brolin actually had some swagger to him, though.
He reminds me of my dad. My dad kind of looked like that back in the 70s.
Kind of had that macho...
With the stash and the messy hair.
Yeah, and kind of a macho, no-nonsense attitude. Not so intelligent to be nerdy, you know what I mean? Dumb enough to be brave. You know, that kind of... That car must have the devil in it.
I'm amazed that they figured that out. Yeah. We're going to have to do a review on that because I was so excited to... Because I check Shudder every day or every couple of days, and they must have just added it like the day before we're recording this.
Yeah, not a bad movie.
The Car!
Actually, that movie held up pretty well other than the edit in the final scene. It's hard to tell where the car was during the final conflict.
Well,
they're like, well, where's the car?
Is it going to hit somebody? I don't know. Well, they probably did that on purpose.
Where's that fucking car?
Well, we don't want to run over any of the stuntmen, so you know, we have to cut all these scenes together.
The premise of a possessed car running around killing people might be good on the surface. I know the 70s was a car culture. It did have kind of a Mad Max vibe. But it's not a... It wasn't... The scene in the garage where it teleported in there, that was kind of... effective.
I wonder if that's where Stephen King got the idea for Christine.
Probably.
Or from a Buick 8.
Probably. Also Maximum Overdrive and Maximum Overdrive and all that. Probably. Just that premise didn't age well.
See, I wonder, I know that, I can't remember if Duel, the Steven Spielberg TV movie, did that come out before or after this?
We have to check, but it was around that same time.
Well, because the thing is, I mean, I'm not going to say, Richard Matheson wrote the short story, which Duel was based on, and I'm sure that came out before The Car.
Right.
Because I think that, what was that, 76?
The Car was 77.
77, yeah, okay. So I'm pretty sure that the story that Duel was based on
Before that,
because that was Richard Matheson.
They were all playing off of each other.
I have it somewhere over there. Like, I have a Richard Matheson story that's called...
You could probably redo that today, but you couldn't confine the evil demonic force to the car itself.
You can't do killer car.
It would have to come out of the car sometimes and then get back in the car. You know what I mean? It's some kind of psychic force or something.
You can't do killer car because it's been done too many times.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Christine was probably like the definitive.
You could have a demonic being driving a demonic car in the way that Ghost Rider rides a demonic motorcycle. You could probably do that.
Yeah.
I think they were kind of limited by budget and special effects. They probably would have liked something in the car to come out and fuck people up. But they couldn't afford that. Remember, the window would roll down and they would look through there, but they would never show you what it is that they saw.
Well, I thought they said so nothing
was in there. There was nothing in it, yeah.
Okay.
But I think that was just an excuse. I think they wanted something in the car. But they couldn't afford it, right.
Well, it's just like in those old movies where they're like, well, we can't afford a monster suit, so let's just say that the monster is invisible. So
right,
just like pretend that you're fighting an invisible monster.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at you, Ator.
Do we have anything else to say about this movie?
No, okay.
Okay,
so
we couldn't wrap it up.
So let's wrap it. I know we talked about a bunch of other movies.
It's a decent flick.
But
I just wouldn't start with this flick if you don't know Cronenberg.
Yeah, I would recommend, if you are new to Cronenberg's, you know, body of work, I would recommend starting, like you said, with The Brood. Or Video Drama.
One of the two.
Or
right.
Even The Fly, even though that's kind of like, it's really good, but that's like a
that's
very
not as Cronenberg-y.
It's not as representative
right, yeah.
of his work. And then like maybe
Scanners.
I'll go back and see the, yeah,
Scanners, yeah.
Go back and see some of the old ones. Like I said, Shivers and Rabid should probably be seen kind of together,
later on, I would think.
They're very similar. Like the themes are very similar, like infection, it's just like spreading to other people and stuff like that.
He was the master of body horror.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
All right, so we're going to wrap this review up. And remember, if you like the show, to like, share, subscribe on all your social media. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or you can go to our blog, 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a PayPal button in the sidebar where you can give a one-time donation. If you'd like to do that, it'd be much appreciated. And remember, these movie retrospectives, just like this one's usually old movies, but sometimes not, these come out every Friday. And we also have 13 o'clock matinee, which is three new movies in the theater that comes out every Sunday, and our regular episodes, which is paranormal or true crime type stuff or whatever it is we feel like doing, that comes out every Tuesday, so be sure to check them out, and we will see you next time. Bye.